Water is everything to farmers in Utah. Using it effectively and protecting it is at the center of everything they do.
It all needs to work together. There's not one thing that's so much greater than the other, but we need to get in harmony with each other. Houses need water. I understand that. People like to flush toilets. People like drink water. I understand. But also my crops need to grow with water. My cows need to drink water. Horses need to drink water. So there's something we all need to work together.
Brett Bunker raises hay, corn, and cattle in Delta, where he uses water from the Sevier River. He also chairs the Water Optimization Committee for the Utah Department of Agriculture and Food. Hannah Fries is the Water Optimization Program Manager for the Utah Department of Agriculture and Food.
Farm Bureau has been fantastic to then take our ideas from the committee up to the legislative body and say, we need some flexibility here, we need some flexibility there, and been able to manipulate the program to be better and better each year as we roll forward.
Welcome to Cows, Plows, and Things That Grow, the Utah Farm Bureau podcast. I'm Dan Bomas. Utah Farm Bureau's mission is to inspire all Utah families to connect, succeed, and grow through the miracle of agriculture. The state's Water Optimization Program is part of the Utah Department of Agriculture and Food, where Kelly Pearson has just been appointed commissioner. Kelly comes from San Juan County, where he worked in the banking industry and served as city manager in Monticello, as well as the county's chief administrative officer. He joined the Department of Agriculture and Food as deputy commissioner in 2019. He's also been interim commissioner twice. With the growing awareness of using water responsibly in every part of Utah, Commissioner Pearson says Utah farmers are the best water conservationists in the state.
They know that the water is the lifeline of their careers, their livelihoods. And for them to be willing to match this program tells a big need for that they want to be the best conservationists ongoing. That this investment is going to help Utah 5, 6, 7 years down the road, and we're going to see great improvements to the Great Salt Lake. I hope everyone knows that our farmers are part of the solution and they want to be the solution to the water issues here in Utah. Farm Bureau is a great trusted voice that they can go to the ag producers and say, you can trust the direction that the government is going. They also are a huge lobbyist for us to get funding for these programs. Without them, the funding's not there. And so with those key roles, they've helped us make this program be successful. I'm excited for the future of ag in Utah. We have a lot of great programs that will help them succeed, especially as we're going into a drought year again. I think our role is to help provide resources to get them through these tough, difficult situations. If our ag producers could only have 2 years of weather consistency, it would be a miracle. But every year it seems like we're either preparing for a drought, in a drought, or coming out of a drought. And I'm excited about the programs that our legislators are funding to help our ag producers succeed through these tough times. I really want to emphasize how important that our ag producers match this program. It's not just state funding. It's that they have worked hard. It's their own money. They're taking a loan out to match our program. So it's great that they have skin in the game. It makes these projects even better. They want to make it work. And I think that's the key point that I want to emphasize.
With that introduction, here's our conversation with Brett Bunker and Hannah Fries.
There is no business more dependent on irrigation water than growing alfalfa hay in the state of Utah. It has to be planned for and executed carefully. So maybe give us an overview of how you look at that resource and how you plan for its use on your farm.
Water's everything. If you don't have water, you're not going to grow anything. It's that simple. And it's not just alfalfa hay. It's the wheat. We raised corn, wheat, yeah, we have alfalfa hay, but you look at all of the commodities in the state have to have water. Like that's just, it's what it is. We're Utah, second driest state in the nation. We need water to grow anything. And I like to eat. So that being said, we're going to need water to make those things happen.
Well, and cattle like to eat too.
Yes.
And camels like to eat. You've even exported hay to places where they raise camels.
Yes.
How important is that as a part of your business, the export business?
Export's huge. Granted, we don't want to get in the tariffs and all the weeds and all those things that go on, but there's markets. We live in a world economy, whether you like it or not. It is a world economy. And so if you grow a commodity and there's a demand for it, people find a way to make it happen.
Okay, and Hannah, is it your job to see that he uses less water?
We can help the producers in the state look for opportunities to use less water. That's what we're here to do.
So how do you do that? Do you do that with specific conservation techniques? Do you do that with advanced planning? Do you do that with long-term planning?
All of the above. What we do with the Water Optimization Program is provide an opportunity for our producers, if they're interested in improving their irrigation efficiencies on farm, we can bring some grant dollars to the table to help offset those input costs.
Is that grant money from the Utah legislature or where?
It is. It's from the Utah legislature. Over the course of the last several years, the program has been awarded $276 million. So not a small investment from the legislature.
Why such a serious investment? Is there enough progress to be made to justify that?
Absolutely. Our agricultural producers are our oldest water right holders, and they are the most prevalent water right holders that we have in the state. So some of our oldest and best water rights that exist in Utah are in the hands of our agricultural producers. And so if we can help them do better with this precious resource, that's a benefit to everybody in the state.
Water conservation begins with things as simple as lining the ditch, but goes to sprinklers, goes to drip irrigation, goes to all kinds of techniques. How have you on your farm implemented water conservation techniques?
Ever since I was a little kid, we ditch lining was big. Cement ditches was a big thing in Millard County. Moved throughout the state in different places. Then the pipe, ADS pipe come on, and that made a big, just more efficient. The old days of the old dirt ditch where you just, I mean, you're going to seep a lot. You're going to lose a lot in that reason. For that reason, we go to a pipe and close it in, and you're going to get the water you need to where you need to go. And so there's a lot of efficiencies just in and of that that make it better.
Does that all come up in a center pivot then, or how do you do that?
We're flood irrigated in Delta.
Okay, so how do you do that out of a pipe?
There's a hole in it. I don't know how else to say it. There's a hole in it. It comes out the end, or we have head gates, and we water for anywhere from a some of the smallers are 8 foot, get all the way to a 14 foot stream. And so it's kind of fast, and it's a large quantity that we push across the.
And how often do you push that water out into the field?
Depending on the crop and things like that, about once a month.
Okay.
But now once a month, meaning we start watering the 1st of April and go from there. Like wheat, we'll be done watering wheat in June. Corn, you don't really start watering corn till end of May, middle to end of May, because you don't plant till April. So you're not going to start. Everything's different. So it all has reasons and timing.
When you plan your programs then for a basin like the Sevier Basin, where they're at the end of the river, how is it different from somebody who's irrigating out of the Bear River or the Spanish Fork River?
Yeah, very different. This program is supposed to be, it's meant to be kind of a one size fits all, and there is not one size that fits anyone. Or any single group. And so depending on where we're at in the state, we need to have flexibility. You know, in the northern part of Utah, where I'm from, we flood irrigate still on the Bear and the Weber, still a lot of improved flood irrigation. As you get into central and southern Utah and even over into the Cache Valley, they're putting in sprinkler systems. And so we need to have the flexibility to allow all different types of irrigation projects to take place.
Are there any of them that can't be made better?
Any irrigation?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Everything can be made better. It just depends on the dollar, right?
What do you present to Farm Bureau members and people who are coming to you for help as ways that They can improve their practice and possibly qualify for the subsidies that you have available.
Yeah, I say I'm from the government and I'm here to help, first of all. So what we really like to do is our Utah farmers are extremely smart. They're intelligent businessmen and women, and they know what's going to work in their area, just like Brett described about the very specific irrigation practices that he needs available to him in Delta. And so a lot of times it is the producer approaching us saying, I have an idea. Let's see if we can make it fit. And then we try our best to do that. And then we do offer some incentives to say, if you want to try a pivot or if that's going to work best for you on your farm, can we help you do it better? Are you interested in soil moisture sensors that talk to your pivot? Are you interested in a variable frequency drive on your pump? And so there's these levels of irrigation water management that we try to incentivize as well.
So with these intelligent tools, then, you can shut off the water before you start wasting it.
Exactly. Yep. So we can just know exactly what the soil profile is looking like, exactly what your crop needs, based on the temperature, based on the time of year, based on the growth stage of the crop. It's a real science that we can get down to.
Or you can wait out there in your rubber boots. And
there is that option, yes, if that's what you want to do.
Yeah. There's even cool technology for flood irrigators. It's just called the flood irrigation sensor. It's a tripod that sits in your field. And when water reaches it, it calls you on the phone and says, water's arrived. And then you can go change your set.
Do you use those?
Yes.
How has that changed over the years? What have you put in that helps you to optimize, again, your water use?
Well, everything in Delta, we laser level. It's GPS now, so there's a percent slope to everything. I do have, we call them just a water bug that had you carry a pager. I'm weird. I have one. But most of it's in my head. I can tell you how long that field's going to take to water because I've watered them long enough now in my life that it's just, I can get you pretty close. And is the water running fast? Is it running slow? Is it wet, spring, dry? Like there's enough factors. And once you get watering, there's an art, or I'm going to call it an art to it, that you kind of get a feel for it. How's it running? Where are you at? And then things will change. But yes, a lot of times, like, the water, the things, the pagers and things like that are nice to have to make sure you stay on your game.
Well, in the Sevier River Basin, supply is your biggest worry, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the worry, yes. Lack of water. Mm-hmm. Everyone will always tell you lack of water, right?
It comes from, you know, the divide in between Kane and Garfield counties all the way up through Sevier County and back
yes.
again. And if those mountains are not getting snow, you've got a problem.
We have a big problem.
How is it looking this year?
Till this last couple weeks, we were only in the 40s and 50% of regular snowpack. We've gone up, but we just don't have the amount of water that's in the Bear and the Weber. We just don't.
How do you adapt to that?
Every year's different.
So
that's just what it is. Every year is different. They set credits last week in each company and how much water they think each one are going to have and deliver. And you make adjustments that way on what water you have.
You're listening to Cows, Plows, and Things That Grow, the Utah Farm Bureau podcast. We'll continue our conversation with Brett Bunker and Hannah Fries right after this.
Attention, Utah Farm Bureau members. We've partnered with Abenity to offer you a bigger and better member benefits platform. With Abenity, you'll get access to all your favorite Farm Bureau discounts, plus thousands of new savings opportunities at over a million locations across the U.S. and Canada. Whether you're planning a trip, shopping, dining out, or enjoying local attractions, savings are just a tap away. Download the app today and start saving instantly. Learn more about utahfarmbureau.org/member-benefits. Utah Farm Bureau and Abenity, your gateway to exclusive perks.
Hannah Fries is the Water Optimization Program Manager for the Utah Department of Agriculture and Food. Brett Bunker is a farmer from Millard County who chairs the department's Committee on Water Optimization.
How about in northern Utah? Is it an abundant year this year, or is there still some worry?
It's an abundant year for us this year. Like Brett just mentioned, you know, we call it our miracle March. Sent us over 100% of normal. I think this morning we're 112% of normal on the Bear. And so that always allows us to take a breath. We feel a lot of pressure on the Bear and the Weber Rivers because of their main tributaries to Great Salt Lake and the pressures surrounding that water body. And so it looks like a good year for us. We, just like any irrigation company, we don't plan on the water till it's in the snow. And then we make adjustments once it's there. And if it isn't there, then we make adjustments just like everybody else. And ag is always the first that will take those cuts.
How is water policy and water law evolving, and how does that affect your job and your job?
You get to go first.
I think the water law that we have here in the West is extremely valuable and extremely important for our agricultural producers. And we settled this, you know, the Great Salt Lake Valley, because we needed to grow food and to farm. And so we can't lose sight of those values. But as the policies change, I think it's giving our producers more adaptability. If they are saving water and conserving, that's always been a concern. You know, if I conserve it, I'm going to lose it. And so as we change those policies in our state legislature, it favors conservation and takes away that fear that our producers are going to lose their water if they are more efficient with it.
How have you adapted to changes in the law?
I like to think myself as an ag businessman, not a farmer. I think, to me, when people say farmer, I think the old American Gothic and with the guy with the pitchfork, right? And water is a lot of the reason why I make that comment in the ag businessman side. Like Hannah talked, we get deliveries. Our water fluctuates every year. I wish it was I got X amount all the time and then I could plan accordingly. Every year is different to me. So we have to fluctuate, and we have to be, no one wants to be reckless with their water. Like, we want to use what's right. We want to use what we need to use. We're not just haphazard and go for it. Like, we know how precious it is, but we have to also be smart and know where we can get return on that so we can make money, so I can keep farming and doing what I want to do. I can't just, and every year's different. That's the kicker. It's the classic college answer, it depends.
How can Farm Bureau help with that? You chair a committee for water optimization. What can Farm Bureau do that helps farmers across the state?
We have, and I'm going to only hit it a little bit, and then we're going to turn the best of this question to Hannah because she's the brains. With this ag water op, we have the option or the ability to help people do it, put in better infrastructure. And as Farm Bureau, I mean, the farmers, they can come and ask. You know, we have a criteria. This is what we're looking for to find what we, I don't know if better projects are the right word, but we have to find a way to classify. And when where can the money be best spent is probably the way to say it. And that's where this ag water comes in. We have X amount of dollars we can use to try making it, the whole system in itself, work better.
So how do you then work with Farm Bureau and other stakeholders to make this work better?
Yeah, Farm Bureau has just been fantastic to be our voice on the Hill with our legislators. And as we're making these decisions, every single year it seems like, you know, we come out with ranking and criteria and we want these projects to rise to the top. And then we do it and we come back and say, oh, I think we need to tweak that. And Farm Bureau has been fantastic to then take our ideas from the committee up to the legislative body and say, we need some flexibility here, we need some flexibility there, and been able to manipulate the program to be better and better each year as we roll forward.
Who's in charge of the oversight? Who makes sure that that money is being used appropriately?
I am. I have myself and a staff of seven. We have planners around the state that are located in each area of the state, and then we have some administrative staff as well to help get those grants in place.
Have you had some failures or mistakes over the years that didn't work out like you'd hoped?
I think we've had some missed opportunities in some instances, but for the most case, it's been some very positive feedback. And when we see those missed opportunities, it's been really good for my staff to come back to the committee and say, we see a hole that we need to fill here. How do we adjust? How can we move our ranking points around or our priorities around so that we can fill those gaps?
For someone who's not involved in agriculture, What do you tell them, or what do you get into their heads while you're walking out toward the end of the ditch and say, I wish people understood this about what I do?
I don't even know how to answer that question. Farming's the only occupation you'd have a part-time job or a full-time job to support that bad habit, shall we call it. It's different. Like, everyone has to eat. Like, that's a given. We have to do that. And that's how things are grown for us. I mean, everyone wants to, alfalfa's bad. Well, cows eat alfalfa. You know, there's horses. There's all sorts of things that we can have. It all has to work together. And I guess if that's all I ever stress to anyone is it all needs to work together. There's not one thing that's so much greater than the other, but we need to get in harmony with each other. Houses need water. I understand that. People like to flush toilets. People like drink water. I understand. But also my crops need to grow with water. My cows need to drink water. Horses need to drink water. So there's something we all need to work together. And I think if that's all I ever accomplish is people, we've got to come together and realize that there's not one that's just the best thing in the world. We all got to work together.
We bounce back to that question. If you're walking down the ditch, what do I wish the public would understand is all the other benefits that this program and our producers provide besides water, you know? And so I like to share a quote often. It's one of my favorites. Tom Vilsack said it, served as a former secretary of the United States Department of Ag. He said, every single one of us who is not a farmer is not a farmer because we have farmers. And I don't think people think about that enough. That everything else that we do, we can do because we don't have to think about where our next meal is coming from. And so I hope that people realize the value of this water optimization program is creating a water resiliency. Like I mentioned earlier, our farmers always take the first cut. If there is a drought, they get cut first before any of the rest of us notice anything different in our lives. And then they still manage to feed us and clothe us and all of the things that we rely on. And so as we improve our systems, it just helps with drought resiliency. Provide a small example. I have a small farm in Tremonton. I took advantage not of this specific program, but one with the federal government and piped about 1,800 feet of ditch to flood irrigate my field. It used to take me about 45 minutes to get my water from the head gate to my field. And in a pipe now it takes about 4 minutes. I can't beat my water back to my field on my four-wheeler. And when in 2022, in the worst drought we've ever been in, we took a cut on our canal, I didn't even notice. Genuinely didn't notice the cut that we took because of this infrastructure. And I think that can play out everywhere in the state as we get better infrastructure, better water delivery, better systems. When droughts come, and they will, our farmers can be more resilient, stay in business, and produce that food and fiber for us.
Then we see more water making it to the lake, too.
Yes. Yep, we will. And it's not going to be the flip of a switch. I think that's an expectation a lot of people have as we do, you know, a couple of systems and all of a sudden the lake's going to fill up. The more full Great Salt Lake gets, the more water it's going to take to fill it that next inch or that next couple of inches. And so it's something that's going to take decades to be able to see that impact on the lake. It's not going to happen tomorrow. I always joke that we're blessed with the Great Salt Lake, the Colorado River, and the Sevier River in the state of Utah. So we talk about taxed water systems in the West. We get three of the top taxed water systems.
We have a ranking criteria, and I think that's what we have to follow. I think it kind of summarize, like even a little out of the last question, it can always be better. Anything you're running right now can always be better. And I think that's kind of this program. It doesn't matter what system you're using. There's always something that can be better. And we've gone through the ranking and we've go all those things. Every time we have a new, we think, oh, this will be the best this time. And we won't have to tweak the system. And we're like, this will be what we need. And then we get the next puzzle thrown at us. Well, we thought we had that fixed last time. And there's always something thrown different to you. But we can always get better, and everyone's system, I don't care where you're at, whether you're in Kanab or Tremonton, Delta, it doesn't matter, and Castle Country over in Emory County, it doesn't matter. You can always get better.
And we haven't even mentioned our friends in groundwater management areas. That's a whole other world, right? Whole
and
other.
That's next podcast.
Yeah. Whole other set of water
yes.
needs.
Well, I know a guy who runs a sod farm out in Faust. He's pumping groundwater.
Yeah.
Does your work include that?
Absolutely. Yep. We have those areas that are in groundwater management plans are being studied. And, you know, long story short, there's going to be cuts on those to return the groundwater levels to safe yield. And so if we can be proactive with our producers to help them pump less, yeah, those are very high priority projects for us as well.
Hannah Fries is the Water Optimization Program Manager for the Utah Department of Agriculture and Food. Brett Bunker is a farmer from Millard County who chairs the department's Committee on Water Optimization. We also heard from Kelly Pearson, who's recently been appointed as the department's new commissioner. We'll continue our conversations on making the best of Utah's limited water. In an upcoming edition of the podcast, we'll learn how agriculture impacts two major water resources in the state of Utah, the Colorado River and the Great Salt Lake. We hope you'll join us then. Thanks for listening. I'm Dan Bomas.